Next case for argument is Ryan versus Union Pacific. Mr. Ross.
Good morning, Your Honors. To please the court and counsel for the appellees, Ms. Consul and Mr. Elliott. The claim contained in the complaint filed in the court below was that the Union Pacific United Transportation Union Agreement for Exclusive Representation of Trainmen violates Section 3, First I of the Railway Labor Act by repudiating the usual matter by which Union Pacific and its trainmen employees, who are members of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers, have historically resolved their on-the-property claim grievances. Now, the underlying question or issue before this court on appeal is whether that claim is one for contract validity, which is justiciable in the federal courts, or whether, as the court below held, it's one, a claim involving contract interpretation, which is within the exclusive primary jurisdiction of the National Railroad Adjustment Board. Appellants have submitted that this is a question of contract validity.
You also need to show, even if there's jurisdiction in the district court, that you have a sound claim on the merits. I read the district court as saying, effectively, that your client lacks a good claim on the merits and therefore there's no jurisdiction. And you respond that there is indeed jurisdiction, but you still need to show a good claim on the merits. Otherwise, we'll just change the dismissal from 12b-1 to Rule 12b-6.
Your Honor, I understand where the court's coming from, and I was trying to get into that. First, we believe that as a question of contract validity, clearly it's one for the federal courts as a result of a number
of things. Here's what I don't understand. U2U has a contract with the railroad, and the contract, of course, you know, gives the U2U the responsibility for prosecuting grievances. Now, I would think that would wipe out the right of the BRE to represent these people. I would think that their representation was for a situation in which the contract hadn't given the grievance procedure to one union. Otherwise, it seems kind of chaotic to have two unions pressing grievances against the same employer.
Well, Your Honor,
same workforce.
It's a legal issue. That
sense does that make?
It would make sense, possibly, in looking at the average union, the average labor relations situation. But insofar as the operating employees on railroads, freight railroads, it doesn't make the same logical transition that the court's attempting to make. And there are several cases that have held so.
Well, explain the sense of it, would you?
Well, these are employees that can belong, unlike
They
can belong to either of the unions. They also sometimes work as trainmen, sometimes they work as locomotive engineers. As a result of that, there has to be some type of consistency. And as you, Your Honor, and also Judge Easterbrook know in a number of cases that have come up before you involving these unions, this is kind of a strange situation. It's come up before this court before, and that case was McElroy. And the BLE entered into a similar contract as the UTU had entered into here. But the usual manner in that case is that those employees
Is it your interpretation of usual manner that it perpetually grandfathers the right of the union to be the griever for these people?
So long as that has become the customary manner.
Yeah, and that's frozen forever, can't be changed by collective bargaining?
According to the Supreme Court in the Landers case, it can be changed, but what it is required is that there has to become a practice over a period of time, which nullifies.
How can a practice emerge? I don't understand. If the collective bargaining agreement can't change the usual manner, the customary practice, then how does a new practice ever get established?
In this particular case, we're not dealing with that situation because
Yes, we are. Your argument has to be that the usual means can never change. Forget the BLE versus the U2U for a second, and assume that for 20 years, the normal practice under the collective bargaining agreement has been to hand a grievance to your immediate supervisor. New collective bargaining agreement is established, and under the new agreement it says you have to give your grievance to a specific person designated for receiving grievances everywhere on the property. Your view has to be that the employees can go on giving grievances to their immediate supervisors. Indeed, they must give the grievances to their immediate supervisors because that's the usual means, and the entire new collective bargaining agreement has to be ignored. I wonder whether that can possibly be a correct understanding of this statute.
That's correct, it is. And I think that Landers case in this court's decision...
Landers certainly does not say that.
Landers,
nothing in the Supreme Court that says it.
It does when you look at the footnote, and also...
The statute certainly doesn't say it.
The statute does not define usual manner. The statute has been defined by the court.
Your argument is that the usual manner of construing the statute is in your favor, even though the language isn't.
No, the language, because of the fact, as said by the court, the First Circuit, usual manner is the ordinary way of looking at it.
Yes, nothing in Landers which says that the ordinary way of doing things cannot be changed by a collective bargaining agreement. That wasn't an issue on the table in Landers.
You're asking us
to say that there is an anti-change rule to be found in the statute, and we're going to have to find it there on the basis of, say, the usual means of doing things, because it's not actually in the statute's language.
Well, the court then is destroying what Congress had actually intended between these groups of people.
Well, why don't you deal with the Pawlowski case? Our case, which says that it's clear that the usual manner refers to what's in the collective bargaining agreement and not the history or custom.
Pawlowski, like a series of other cases, involved unions that don't have this situation of dual membership or alternative membership, which is a more accurate term, and also where the employees do not shuttle back and forth. And it's also dealing with a pre-investigation hearing, which depended upon due process issues. Not the ones that we're talking about, Section 3, First I.
If one of your union members was working as an engineer rather than a... Now your people are what? You're the engineers.
Correct, Your Honor.
And the other people are the...
Trainmen conductors,
Your Honor. Used to be firemen, is that?
And they used to include firemen, yes, sir.
So if one of your people was working as a trainman, your argument is nevertheless his grievance would be handled by the BLE, even though the trainman's grievances would be handled by the U2U. That's what's difficult to make sense out of when the collective bargaining agreement has tried to consolidate all the grievance procedures in this
particular case, the collective bargaining agreement did not attempt to do that because of the fact that the agreement was signed back in 1970, and for 20-some years thereafter or more, the UP and the BLE and the trainmen members of the BLE applied it in the customary fashion, which was that BLE could represent. It wasn't until August of 2000 that they cut that off.
But they renew this collective bargaining agreement periodically, don't they? What's the term?
Well, under the Railway Labor Act, a contract does not have a term.
There's no term written
in
the contract?
No, you have to serve a Section 6 notice, and then you can sit down and change it. It's a long, drawn-out process.
Okay, so if there were a new, but your position is that it doesn't make any difference because even if there were a brand new collective bargaining agreement, it couldn't take away this grievance right. Isn't that your argument?
That's our argument. That's not the usual manner.
That's the answer to my question. Once something gets established, it can never,
the
ever
court,
be changed.
But, Your Honor, then you're saying that this circuit was wrong in McElroy, and McElroy justifies Landers.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Ross.
You.
Ms. Counsel?
May it please the court, Mr. Ross, I will be sharing the time allocated to the appellees with Daniel Elliott, who's representing United Transportation Union. And, Your Honor, the issue presented in this appeal squarely is whether the lower court was correct in holding that it lacked subject matter jurisdiction to resolve the dispute over the handling of claims and grievances on the property of the former Chicago and Northwestern Transportation Company. The manner of handling grievances on that property is set forth in a collective bargaining agreement that was executed in 1978.
Pursuing a question that Judge Easterbrook asked, why is the issue treated as one of jurisdiction rather than one of the merits? I mean, they have a statutory claim. It fails. Why doesn't that just mean judgment on the merits for the defendant?
Your Honor, we don't disagree. In our motion to dismiss, we move for dismissal on grounds of 12b-1 and 12b-6. The lower court dismissed on 12b-1 because this is not a question of contract validity. It is a question of contract interpretation. In fact, the appellants in their complaint and in their brief admitted that the issue is whether Union Pacific's interpretation of this collective bargaining agreement as denying BLE members the right to have the BLE represent them under a contract that is negotiated with the UTU is in fact a violation of the usual manner set forth in Section 3 first of the Railway Labor Act.
Everybody agrees what the contract says. The only question is whether it's a lawful contract or not.
And the issue of
so
whether
I don't understand why this is jurisdictional.
The question of whether it's a lawful contract, Your Honor, I think is arises because of the Landers decision. And in the Landers decision, the question was whether or not the court had jurisdiction to hear the claim in that case. The court exercised jurisdiction, the lower court exercised jurisdiction, and actually went to the merits of whether or not the usual manner of handling grievances on Amtrak involved allowing the members of the minority union to represent its members. When it reached the Supreme Court, the jurisdictional question wasn't there, it was a merits question as to whether or not to affirm the lower court, which had been affirmed by the First Circuit, in its finding that there was no evidence that the usual manner was anything other than the collective bargaining agreement. Here, the collective bargaining agreement has been in place since 1978. And contrary to Mr. Ross's argument, there is no historical practice of allowing the BLE to represent UTU members in grievances under the UTU agreement. What occurred was from 1978 to 1989, those grievances were handled exclusively by the UTU in accordance with their collective bargaining agreement. It is alleged that between the period of 1989 and 2000, that there were occasions where the BLE represented these members. But that can in no way alter the collective bargaining agreement. And getting to a statement that you made, Judge Easterbrook, the Landers decision doesn't stand for the proposition that you can never change the usual manner. In fact, it is the court stated, unless the UTU in that case became the official bargaining representative for Amtrak engineers, or the usual manner of processing those grievances was changed, they had no right to have the minority union represent them. I notice that my light is on. I would like to allow Mr. Elliott the remaining time.
Thank you, Ms. Counsel. Mr. Elliott?
May it please the Court. With respect to the earlier statements, I just wanted to add on regarding the illogical nature of the argument set forth by the appellants. As you said, if the past practice on the property had been to allow the BLE to represent UTU grievances, then as a result, based on this argument, it would never be able to be changed. And that would be exactly the result that the Supreme Court...
Well, maybe you can, since you're the union lawyer, maybe you can illuminate some of the mysteries of this. Does the BLE have a collective bargaining agreement with the Union Pacific? Or?
Yes, they're the certified representative of
and
the engineers.
And who do they represent?
The engineers.
They represent the engineers, and
correct.
You represent the trainmen.
That is correct.
And so the idea is they want to represent the trainmen who belong to their that in grievances they want to represent the trainmen who happen to belong to their union. Is that the argument?
That's correct.
Now, do you want to represent the engineers who happen to belong to your union, or are we going to have the mirror image case?
That's a touchy question. I don't believe I don't know the facts with respect to the situation on the property with respect to the BLE agreement. I don't know whether they have an exclusive representation clause, so I don't know if we're going to be here again. And I also don't know if that has ever occurred, where we have actually asked to represent. It may be that, as BLE alleges here, that we're allowed to represent them, and it's not disputed. But in this instance, obviously, the difference is that there's an exclusive representation clause, which is clear and unambiguous. And if that clause isn't allowed to stand in this proceeding, what would happen would be exactly what the Supreme Court warned against in Landers, which would be the concerns that it had about the prompt and orderly resolution of minor disputes. First of all, it would obviously, as you said, become quite chaotic and slow down the process. And second of all, it may lead to...
But of course, chaos in this particular part seems to be the usual manner. At least to go by the amount of litigation that reaches us.
Well, I wouldn't deny that, but in this instance, we're actually trying to make it less chaotic by having a collective bargaining agreement between the parties rule, which also seems to follow along the lines of what the Railway Labor Act is in favor of, is of the collective bargaining process in resolving disputes. And also, if I might add, with respect to the Landers case, one of the concerns that the Landers court had was regarding the possibility of the minority union using that grievance procedure to undermine the majority union, which also seems to defeat some of the purposes of the Railway Labor Act. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Jones. Mr. Ross, how much time did you have? So let me ask you a question. Could one of your, is it your position that a member of your union could choose to have his grievance handled by either the UTU or the BLE, or must he, on your view, use the BLE?
You're talking about on the trainman's craft or in the engineer's craft?
I don't know.
All right.
You tell me.
We're the collective bargaining representative for engineers. They're for trainmen. We have trainmen members. They have engineers members. If the court does decide in this case, as it seems to be indicating, that would like to support the decision of the court.
Suppose we decide in your favor. Is your position that your guys can use either a U2U griever or a BLE griever?
In the engineer's craft right now, they can use either, depending upon who they belong to.
Can they use both? What do you mean, depending on who they belong to? I mean, suppose they're doing engineer's work. They're doing...
And they have a claim that arises.
But they belong to the U2U. Now, if they have a grievance, do they have to use the U2U griever, or can they use the BLE griever, or can they use both?
If they're a UTU member, they'll probably use the UTU.
What are they lawfully entitled to do?
They could use the BLE if they so chose. They could also go to their craft their representative, the union they hold membership
right.
in,
and could
use that.
Could they do both?
No,
could
not
they go
at the
in
same
succession?
Time.
Why? Could they go in succession?
No, you can only use one as your representative during the claims procedure.
Why? Does it say so?
No, I guess you could switch in midstream after
well,
you go through a various
Well, that's the kind of chaos step. That we're worried about, aren't
but,
we?
But you did ask a question before that still has to be answered. It wasn't answered by Mr. Elliott. This case will take on overtones of Corzine, which you wrote the opinion in the event that the court would decide in favor of the type of handling being advocated by the UP and the UTU.
Okay, thank you very much. Guys?